We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Tony, we got a guest in house. Let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
Majority of folks here in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
We enjoy talking ball with Anthony Herron. If you were on the phone, I would tell you that he's joining me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from at Alpamonte Ford. But he isn't. He is right in front of me.
Could this be like the Alpamonte Ford hot seat?
Sure, we can do that. We can make it the hot seat. That's totally fine. You can hear Anthony on Sirius XM Big Ten every morning from 6 till 9 with our buddy Jason Goff. You can watch him on Fox 32 before and after games. You can watch him on the Pac-12 Network covering college football. And you can just enjoy him here as all he does, you know, the post show now with Olin Krutz.
You got one of those in last night. That was fun.
It was really good. I was listening to you guys
we
talk
to work
ball
with Olin all the time. That was my first time doing it. I mean, we didn't even get a full hour in either because the game ran a little bit long, so we just, you know, pushed it up to 6:30 in time for Sunday Night Football. But it was a good meaty football, I guess, extended segment, essentially, what we got to do. It was less than an hour, but it was fun.
I explained to Olin, he followed me back here because I came in and did my podcast from here while you guys were getting ready to do the show. I was like, you know, there's like a quick way to get from NBC Sports Chicago to The Score.
Oh, you know, like secret routes.
Yeah, it takes 4 minutes. Like you just,
really?
Yeah, you just come through the merchandise mart, take a left on the Wacker. Take Wacker right to the parking garage, and you're good. And he's like, man, this is great. So it worked out. I wanted to make sure that he got back here so you weren't just sitting around in the studio like, wait, wasn't someone supposed to be here with me? So I listened on my way home, and you guys sounded fantastic.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I didn't get an opportunity to react. There was one thing I wanted to react to that I wasn't able to get around to during our post show, because when you stopped in and said hello, and I was talking to Mr. Dixon, Chris Dickens, and, you know, I'm trying to figure out, okay, do we have a commercial format? Do we have any sponsors? Where are my reads and all this stuff? Chris did a great job kind of helping me get my mind wrapped around things to drive the time I spent with Olin. I didn't get a chance to, I just saw you as you perused our presence here in the studio. Then you walked out, and a few moments later when Chris was done with me, I was like, was Lawrence Mann an ascot?
I was.
Like, all right, check him out. I was sort of caught off guard by it, but I wanted to finish what I was doing with Chris in the moment. I was like, well, wait a minute. And it just sort of washed over me after you walked back out. Then I just kind of asked the room, like, wait a minute, was Lawrence wearing an ascot?
I was.
Have you forayed into the ascot world before?
No, I never done it before.
It was the maiden voyage.
I figured with the game being in London that I would step it up from a style standpoint yesterday. Uh-huh. So Mel bought me an ascot.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm a rocket. I'm just going to go with it. I've seen Charles Woodson.
Right.
He's kind of famously been wearing them.
Uh-huh.
I kind of liked it. And I might do more of it.
Does it tie in the back or does it all just
tuck like,
in
the
front?
Has like a loop. So it's almost like tying a tie where you just kind of go over and under after you tie the loop. And it's right there, ready for you. I thought it was easy peasy to tell you the truth. So I might wander out, maybe get a black one and a blue one. I got blue, black, and red, and then just play around and see which ones I like.
I like it.
Yeah. And plus, the guys don't wear ties. Like, that's
okay.
So I'm kind of like, well, I'm the host, so I'll just wear a tie.
Yeah, I got to look like the adult in the room kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess. But it was fun to mess around with it yesterday, and maybe I'll do it more.
Because the bow tie thing has crossed my mind. Like, I kind of, I've as I've been in TV more and more, like, all right, let me. let me step my funky sock game up. All right, let me get a variety of colored dress shirts and everything. And the bow tie has crossed my mind, but I don't know. Like, I got a thicker neck. I know the big guy wearing the bow tie thing is starting to become, I guess, more accepted fashion-wise.
Dahani Jones, right? Didn't he wear a lot of bow ties?
Yeah, he was a big bow tie guy for a while. And I don't know, but the ascot, I'm like, you know what? I've never really considered the ascot.
If maybe I go bow tie, especially with my style of glasses, I mean, it feeds right into to 79th and Stoney.
Right.
I'm just out there asking if you want a bean pie or did you see me in Malcolm X? So I haven't voyaged into the bow tie yet, but maybe my next door neighbor is a member. Maybe I
probably
can
got some options for you.
Yeah, maybe I can say how would y'all feel about this? And you can say, that's totally okay. All right. So what did you see yesterday when you watched the film of the Bears versus the Raiders? What stuck out to you?
Man, they got handled up front. And that was something. It's one thing, and one of the comparisons I was making on, you know, the variety of shows and platforms I get to talk about the game with yesterday was I thought back to, I even tweeted a bit during the game, the Miami game from last year, where just especially on defense, where I felt like, man, this is not the standard of defense that we're accustomed to seeing from the Bears. And it felt that way very early. And it really didn't leave for the majority of the game. You know, they got some takeaways, which put them in great position. And, you know, felt like, okay, Oakland wasn't quite as assertive with the moments they tried to do some things in throwing the ball. But throughout, they pretty much handled the Bears up front on the offensive and defensive line of scrimmage. And that really stuck out throughout the entire game. I mean, I didn't anticipate that the Bears' offense was going to be very explosive. So I didn't find that surprising. But Chase was what I tend to expect from Chase Daniel. You know, we've discussed this. He's a quarterback with a ceiling, but within that ceiling, I think Chase Daniel can play a certain level of quality football in National Football. I thought for the most part he did that. He had a couple of very costly interceptions. You know, first one leads to points for the Raiders, second one pretty much closes the show and takes the Bears out of contention to be able to come back and try to win the game. And that's who he is as a quarterback. That's what he's going to continue to be. That's who he's been throughout his entire career. So I don't look at the game and blame Chase for being Chase. Chase is 11 years in this league. He's Chase Daniel. And, you know, the city got really excited about him last week. That's what Chicago does. You know, they did it with Matt Barkley. They did it with Kyle Orton. And they're going to continue to do it, I guess, until there is a quarterback who solidifies himself and the city wraps their arms around him. But Chase was not the biggest issue. The biggest issue was the line of scrimmage. And now we got to hope over the next couple of weeks with this bye week in here, see what the – and there wasn't a podium, right?
Yeah there hasn't really been a real update on Akeem Hicks,
Bilal Nichols, the interior of that Bears defensive line, because it's one thing for Roy Robertson-Harris, for Nick Williams to get the majority of the snaps. You know, like the game against the Vikings was one thing because – a lot of that was the Bears able to, on first and second down, put Minnesota in more predictable scenarios. And then you can get, you know, younger guys or more, you know, guys who may be more finesse guys or just your inexperienced, your second line players. They were able to thrive in that game against Minnesota because the Bears dictated the tempo of the game to the Vikings, put them in predictable downs and distances. And it's like, all right, let's tee off when it's time for this porous offensive line to try to pass protect against us. They just weren't able to do that at all because of the way they got pushed around on first and second and, when necessary, on third down by that Raiders offensive line.
I don't know if you saw, I tweeted out, you were probably on the air when I tweeted this out, but when I went back and looked at the game, I crunched the numbers a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just to back up what you're saying. Raiders ran 32 first down plays. On those plays, they racked up 170 yards. So that's an average of 5.3 yards per play on first down. They were in second and five or better 10 times in the game yesterday, and they scored all three of their touchdowns on first down. That's an ass-whipping on first down.
Dominance. That is absolute dominance up front. And, you know, I know, like, part of the narrative, it seems, since yesterday was, well, where'd Khalil Mack disappear to? Khalil Mack didn't really disappear anywhere. Derek Carr was never forced to hold the football. And as a lot of teams tend to do, and maybe John Gruden learned the lesson from his brother Jay, who he said, we are not going to find ourselves in very many situations where Khalil Mack is left one-on-one with a tight end, with an offensive tackle, with a running back, with anyone. There's going to be multiple people dedicated towards blocking Khalil Mack. And if he is one-on-one, this is going to be like, and Derek Carr had statistically gotten the ball out of his hands more quickly than any other quarterback in the NFL throughout the entire season up to this point. That continued to be the case in the game yesterday. The few times he did hold the ball, you know, they got him under some pressure. You know, when Khalil Mack got the hit on him that time, it was one of the few times where he did legitimately hold the ball in the backfield. But that's part of what takes the starch out of a pass rush. You know, they did it multiple ways. With the way they bullied the interior of the Bears' defensive front, with the interior of that Raiders' offensive line, pushing them around, then that takes the starch out of your pass rush. And then also when the quarterback constantly, when the ball's gone over and over again, then it makes you hesitant when you come out of your stance as a pass rusher. When over and over again, after you commit to a move and the amount of energy it takes to try and win with commitment, whether it's a power rush or a counter move or speed up the field, and then, you know, you're focused on defeating that blocker in front of you, and the next thing you know, ball's gone. It's like, well, okay, now I got to get in chase mode, and the ball's already gone. Once that happens over and over again, there's a switch that just inherently starts to turn off for you as a pass rusher, and you have to be conscious of trying to turn that back on. But the difficult thing is, it just happens over and over again where the ball is gone, and you're not able to get home on that quarterback. And that's where the Raiders, who'd been very good, they've been effective in the first quarter of virtually every game they played this season, but they were able to stick with that game plan. And so the scripted portion, that first 15 that I think it was Prince Amukamara was talking about it after the game, they had a really effective first 15, but really the same strategy that they utilized within that first 15 was able to be effective throughout the game, because the Bears defense didn't necessarily, it was like Chuck Pagano, I talked a lot about adjustments that Chuck had made in games earlier this season, but because the Bears weren't able to dictate the physicality of this game, then Chuck seemed a bit lost in how he could make Derek Carr uncomfortable, and they never really did. I mean, Derek Carr just threw a ball up into the air that one time with the errant pitch. Aside from that, there wasn't a moment where he really looked harassed or uncomfortable, either mentally or physically.
We're talking with Anthony Herron. He's one of our experts here at The Score, and our conversation with Anthony is being brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. What does cut blocking do to a defensive lineman?
Good question. Especially on a play away, like it's one thing where a guy's coming right at you. Say, you know, for instance, if you're a blitzing linebacker and you're coming directly through an A gap or a B gap, and you're thinking maybe a running back is going to chest you up and then he cuts your legs out from under you. That's one thing, and it can sap your aggressiveness, but at least that's more straight on, where you're not quite as concerned about the safety of your lower body. When you actually have a play away, if you're a defensive lineman, you're coming out of your stance, and you initially, as you come out of your stance, you have one blocking surface in mind. Here's the player I'm going to engage. As his momentum goes away, and you can tell here's the point of attack on the opposite side of the formation. And so initially, your step or steps are taking your momentum towards that blocker. And then out of nowhere, and you know, after you experience it with it, you tend to expect it to come. But as you're getting into, you know, finishing your first, getting into your second step, another lineman who you're not really focused on, who you're not prepared for, comes and cuts your legs out from under you. If you're not physically engaged with that initial blocker, it's not a penalty. Now, you're supposed to, as an offensive lineman, work to get your hat, your head, your helmet in front of that defensive lineman before you actually cut his legs out from under him. That usually is not completely the case. You got very big people throwing very big bodies into very big thighs and knees and legs. But once that happens, then you can. You know, you got really big people falling into your legs. It makes you hesitate a little bit, man. It forces you to start to think about the mortality of your football career. You got big people diving into your legs while you're focused on something else, and you're not really able to try and engage them. So we saw a lot of times where there were Bears defensive linemen sort of approaching the cut block before it would even get there. Roy Robertson-Harris was doing it a few times. Eddie Goldman at times. Leonard Floyd was certainly doing it. And there were times where Eddie Goldman, it looked like he was backing up off the ball, wasn't even firing out of his stance in run scenarios, double teams, walk. You don't see Eddie Goldman get walked back. He was getting walked back yesterday, and it seemed like there was an effect of the Raiders and the cut blocking that they were doing on the backside of scoops and plays away that really had an effect on the Bears up front.
What did you see with Roquan Smith yesterday?
Roquan appeared, I mean, and a little bit of it is kind of playing dime store psychologist, because he had a number of tackles in the game, but he didn't make any impactful plays. The energy, the urgency that he played with didn't really seem to be there either. So whether it still relates to, you know, the personal issues that were there from last week, whether it relates to, as I do think was part of the issue with the entire team overall, the jet lag that may have been there, the energy that they didn't approach the first part of the game with. I don't think Roquan was the only one who was guilty of not seemingly playing with that same fire, that same type of extra heartbeat that we've known this Bears defense to play with week in and week out. But I didn't see that specifically from Roquan. Yeah, he didn't look like that same Roquan who he became at around the halfway point of last season, where he was one of the most fiery, one of the best defensive players on the field, thumping people, making quick reads, getting downhill in the run game. Like what we saw the Raiders linebackers able to do, not only with the way their defensive line were pushing around the Bears offensive line, but their linebackers were blitzing their fit. Where sometimes you come downhill and you're reading a block and playing into a block as a linebacker, and I use the term peeling that block off of your defensive lineman. The Raiders were doing that some, but one of the things they were doing was quite often they weren't even playing into the block of the, you know, if there's a Bears offensive lineman looking to double team someone in the defensive front, and then the linebacker comes down and hits that lineman, they were going beyond that and blitzing their fit, just coming directly through the gap responsibility that was theirs. That, to me, was another indication, and actually Olin went into a couple of nice examples last night during the post-post show we were talking together, where there's just times that come up in the game, and it's been a pretty consistent refrain, where it seems like the opposing defense, and I mentioned this when I talked to you the first week leading into that opener in Green Bay, and I don't think I brought it up with you, but I know the morning of that game against the Packers, I told Dan and Connor that Thursday morning, there were multiple people around the NFL who told me they'd spent the offseason, they felt like they had a really good bead on the Bears offense, on keys, on tendencies, on formations, on individuals in those personnel groups, and knowing where they felt like the ball was going to go. And there were good examples that Olin even brought up last night of that, where the formation to a defender should indicate one thing and at least a preparation to react to it. And the Raiders would see a trips formation or a bunch right here or someone in a crack toss position and ignore that and just know, you know what, we know the back's offset right here. We know the play is going over there. We're going to switch our alignment. You know, we're going to stem down inside and go where we know the ball's going. And that happened several times in the game yesterday. So then it does put the offensive line in a bit of a bind where you're thinking they're going to react to one thing formationally. And say, you know what, we don't respect that. We know that's not about to happen. We actually know this is what's going to happen. And you saw the Raiders do that a few times.
With the Bears offensive line, and I guess we could talk about Kyle Long in particular, are they winning individual battles? And if so, why not?
Certainly not consistently. And specifically Kyle Long, you know, he's always been a tall guy. He's not, you know, you tend to think of guards as being, from an offensive line standpoint, maybe a little bit shorter in stature and thicker in build. Kyle's never been built like that, but as he's now older, as he's had a lot of lower body surgeries, it does seem like part of those things are taking an effect. And I actually, as bad as the Bears offensive line played in week one, I viewed a potential positive from that is that, you know, Kyle Long, he appeared to be moving well. Now, at the point of attack, things weren't going well, but just watching him run around, I thought in open space as they were pulling him, as he was working his way up to the second level and getting free to try to engage linebackers, I thought Kyle was moving really well in that first game. His engagement, his power, his thrust at the point of attack still doesn't appear to be there. So he's certainly someone who stands out to me just up front on the Bears offensive line that has been able to play the game with power, that for whatever reason, that power at the point of attack doesn't seem to be there. Now, one of the things that Jim Miller and I were talking about last night in our postgame show, the lateral nature of the Bears run game, this has been a pretty common refrain to me with Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich, it doesn't put the offensive line in an aggressive tenor when they're coming out of their stance because everything is so lateral. When you're running so much outside zone, when your run game is predicated off the shotgun for the most part, then it is difficult to have that aggressive charge moving forward when your first step is lateral. Now, there's a lot of teams who have successful run games based largely off of zone schemes. That has never seemed to suit this group of Bears linemen, though. When we think back to the first couple of years of Jordan Howard's career, aside from James Daniels being in the mix now, pretty much the same group, you know, Leno and Massey and Long and Whitehair. I mean, it's pretty much been this group who's been blocking the run, blocking everything for the Bears on the offensive line for a number of years now. And schematically, the way that Nagy and Helfrich call the run just has not seemed to consistently suit this group up front. And Chicago, Jordan Howard's out of town. The run game is worse without Jordan Howard so far than it was with everybody's favorite punching bag from last season, Jordan Howard.
Speak on it, Anthony, because a lot of people love to make fun of, of him and say that he was the problem with the run game, and he's too slow, and none of this stuff is going to work. And then he finds himself behind a quality offensive line and is almost averaging 5 yards a carry.
And just as he did in the month of December last year, when the Bears made some adjustments with how they called the run game, and they did have more of a downhill charge with the way they called the run plays. In five games in December last year, Jordan Howard went for about 17 carries. They got him the ball more, and they adjusted the way they called the run plays. 17 carries, 80 yards, 4.5 yards a carry. He looked like the Jordan Howard we had seen earlier in his career. Now, it doesn't mean to me that getting rid of him was the worst thing in the world, but still know what you need to adjust with the run game. If that's not the back you believe in, I mean, he didn't have, you know, the hands the Bears wanted. He's made some nice grabs in Philly this year, but he's a better pass receiver there than he was here. That's fine. I grant those things. And I do think David Montgomery is a talented runner, but Jordan Howard being gone isn't enough to solve what ails the Bears' run game. There's adjustments schematically that I believe will suit this group up front on the offensive line. Because as of right now, Kyle Long is still really the only guy who you would think of as perhaps older. Are his best days physically behind him?
He's an old rookie.
Yeah.
He's a 25-year-old rookie.
Right. So, I mean, he's played a lot of ball. He's had a lot of surgeries at this point. Is there good football still in Kyle Long? I think so. I certainly hope so. But beyond that, you wouldn't look at other guys at the other four, and we throw Ted Larson in there, the other five guys who are in that O-line rotation. They're not, like, past their prime. These are guys who should still be able to play quality football physically. Bears need to schematically find a way to suit this offensive line in the run game.
Anthony, I appreciate it as always. Great analysis. You can watch Anthony on Fox 32. You can hear him on Sirius XM Big Ten with Jason Goff every morning from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. You can watch him on Pac-12 Network, and you can follow him on Twitter at Big Ant Heron.
And if you see me with an ascot, I will definitely credit Lawrence Holmes for it, because you may be giving me the bravery that I need to go ascot on the air.
Well, I mean, you're a taller, better in shape guy. It's going to look better on you than it does on me. But I at least wanted to try it, and I think I kind of liked
it. How'd it feel?
I really kind of liked it. I felt free, honestly, good, to tell you good. The truth, with no tie on. But maybe I'll mess around. Maybe I'll mess around and try the bow tie. Maybe I'll do that for one of the shows too, and it'll just be like, you know, just
keep
hang
guessing.
Out. 79 and Stony, you know how it is. Thank you, Anthony. That is very Anthony fun. Heron. You can hear him here also on The Score. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I heard one of our Bears analysts this morning speak on the Roquan Smith play of yesterday. I want to share that with you in case you missed it. I'll do that next here on The Score. It's a Built for Tough Monday here on The Score, brought to you by your local Ford dealers. Visit buyfordnow.com. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. I'm going to go on vacation, man, after the show today.
Me too.
There's a difference, Tony. You have a day off. I'm actually going to be gone for a while. That's different. But I like that in your mind, you're like, I'm going on vacation. Like, you should. That's the way you should look at days off.
Tony, what are you going to do on your vacation?
He's going to the islands, Blue and Stony. That's what he's doing.
Probably go to Bulls practice and do a No Zones episode.
So, in other words, you're going to work.
Probably.
Awesome. I would tell you maybe don't work with your day off. But I get it. Everyone wants to get ahead so things don't pile up on them, that sort of thing. Right? So there's going to be a cavalcade of people who hold down my show for the next week and couple of days. One of them you just heard, Anthony Heron and Olin Krutz, are going to do a show together.
Oh, Thursday. Whew, that's going to be a lot of football.
It's going to be a ton of football.
I'm going to just bring a bag of footballs and just throw them around the studio.
They're going to have plenty to talk about. Although I wonder if there's going to be a Cubs manager hired in that time frame. No, but they're doing all the interviews this week, right? Girardi's going to get his grinder interview, and they already they'll talk with Will Venable. They'll find out what he knows.
Holding people accountable. Let's go.
Yeah.
So, Will, how do you like Chicago?
I like it a lot.
What's your favorite pizza spot? Just curious.
Madden's Post. I would tell him don't say that. But it is right there next to the ballpark, so maybe they do have good pizza. I would suggest don't say that. Joe's getting closer, I guess, to getting that Angels job. He's doing his interview today with them. It's a slam dunk, right? That's Joe's job if he wants it.
They might do a couple other, like, just for show interviews.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, Joe, how's it going? Oh, cash? Here's a bag of it.
Here's a whole, because Artie Moreno has a whole bag of cash. They got a lot of money out there. They got enough money to pay Mike Trout $500 million. They got all the monies. All right, back to the football. This morning I was driving in. It's one of those mornings where like I kind of went outside of my routine. Like I woke up and I hate to admit this, but the first thing that was on my mind today was I'm going to watch the Bears game again. So like 7 o'clock, like Panthers, like making her coffee and stuff. And I'm sitting there writing notes down. So I was a little bit off of schedule today because I usually get in here on a Monday at like 10 o'clock or so, but I was driving, listening to Pat Manley on with Bernstein and McKnight. And it was really good because Pat's really, really good. By the way, they had Brad Maynard on the pregame yesterday. So good. I agree, Tanny. Chef's kiss on that. He was phenomenal, especially the story. If I were doing more shows this week, I would tell you to look up and pull the story that he told about rolling into Bears camp in a Mercedes and Olin being relentless about a punter having a Mercedes. But I'm not. So anyway, back to Patrick Manley. He was on with Bernstein and McKnight, and the question of Roquan came up in the way that Roquan Smith played in yesterday's game. Check out what Pat saw.
Well, you know, I heard you guys talking about Roquan. He did not look comfortable out there. Normally, he's a guy, see ball, get ball, recognizes what's in front of him, and is the first one there. He didn't seem like he was that guy at all. The other problem was those guys up front got pushed back. You know, when you get pushed back that far, it's tough for a linebacker now to put his hands on the back of the D lineman and try to find the ball instead of running to the gap with that separation between the linebacker depth and the O-line, D-line. And it just, they got beat up front. They got pushed off the ball. And as soon as Akeem Hicks came out of the game, I think they started, you know, licking their chops a little bit more, knowing who was in there as the backups. Guys, they averaged 340 pounds a guy across the front of that offensive line. Mm. The Vikings were 305 pounds a guy. So, and the Vikings run more of a, you know, that zone bucket step kind of offensive scheme where you're kind of running side to side. And the Bears D-line gets up the field. And they were able to penetrate and dominate that game last week. Well, this week, that 340 pounds was coming right downhill at them, and they didn't have an answer for it. And not having Akeem Hicks is a big answer for that. But the guys weren't able to stop that those big guys up front. And I think that's you know, that might be something that in the future teams might try to just line up and run it down their throat. But once Akeem is healthy, that's a tough thing to do.
It also looked to me like they were playing in the skirting the edge of the law a little bit with some of the cut blocks when you had a guy engaged. And it looks like they saw that the Bears might be susceptible to some lower blocking rather than trying to engage him up top.
I think that's the way they figured out how to block Eddie Goldman. That guy is so good. He's a guy that can take that, you know, that 340-pound guy on. They didn't do that to him. As you're talking about, you know, Hudson, the center, would have his hand on his shoulder. The next thing you know, Incognito, he got called on that one. And there were a couple other that were there that could have been called. But I think that's also something that gets in Eddie Goldman's head or even just any D lineman's head. Yep. That, are they cutting me now? So you're playing off a little bit. You're not, you know, firing off as much. And it's just a little bit of something that you've got to question yourself or question what's going to happen right in front of you right after the snap of the ball.
So that was Patrick Manley, I think, giving great detail about some of the stuff that went on, how the Bears were caught off guard, how they were pushed around, and how that continued after Akeem Hicks leaves the game after the eighth play. And I still haven't really heard any update. Have you guys seen any updates on Akeem Hicks? I'm like, maybe it's just maybe because of the time change and the travel back to Chicago, but damn, did that look gruesome yesterday. It looked really like you might be missing one of your best players for a while. My hope is that the bye week is going to allow for the Bears to do a lot of soul searching and figure some of this stuff out. Like Anthony was talking about with the run game. I don't like the way that their schedule sets up for the next 5 weeks after the bye. But maybe we will see the best version of the Bears going forward. I'm still unsure. There was one more thing I wanted to share with you. Tony, can we load up the Jenny Hale? Because the last thing we have left on our cavalcade of sound, I'd rather play it now than taking a break and talking about it. Here's the thing, and I said this at the top of the show as well, for those of you who are just now jumping in. I don't know if the Bears' travel plans played a role in them losing. But I know that you can't dismiss it summarily. And I don't like that Nagy has done that. And the reason that I say that is because there hasn't been enough data. There haven't been enough games. There haven't been enough teams that have traveled, that have tried different approaches for you to definitively say that this approach was the right approach for us. I think that it's difficult. I think there's a lot of sleep science stuff that we don't fully understand about how our body works. Anyone who travels that many time zones, it can be difficult. I mean, you've all felt
it. Now, these two teams.
Well, we're getting ready to hear from Jenny and her report on that. But you've all felt it whenever you've traveled, that thing. And whether it's jet lag or any sort of other fatigue or just the adjustment that one's body needs to make, I don't know if there's enough data in NFL games in London at noon for Matt Nagy to just dismiss it. Before the game started, like right before kickoff, Jenny Hale, who's the sideline reporter of that broadcast team, who's given us a couple of really good nuggets in her time of reporting on the Bears in games, she gave us this nugget on the Raiders and their approach versus the Bears.
Now, these two teams employ two very different travel game plans to get here. The Bears did not arrive until Friday, treating this like any other away game, which is what the Raiders did last year. And John Gruden told us, nope, that was a big mistake. By the time kickoff rolled around, Gruden said he was so exhausted he didn't know how his players were functioning. So this time, the Raiders left as soon as their Sunday game was over last week, arriving Monday to give everybody maximum time to acclimate. Dick, we're about to find out which strategy pays off best.
And that'll be a pattern that maybe other teams might follow the rest of the way.
I don't know what strategy is best, but I do think that it's interesting that Gruden tried it the way that the Bears did it and felt like his team wasn't ready. And there are many factors that we could talk about there, like your team wasn't as good, like all of that stuff. But that's why I don't like Nagy just dismissing it. I would rather him say, it's something that we'll look into, because I think that they're a new data point in trying to figure out how to do this in case you have to do it again.
I might have would have been follow the leader on that one. It's like he played over here last year. I'm probably going to lean towards Gruden's way of thinking on this and kind of copycat.
Instead of copycatting Andy Reid, which is what Nagy did and what Nagy does.
Yeah, that's the thing is, he copycatted the guy who he's trusted for everything else. So to randomly choose Gruden then, like if you're following Nagy logic, that would be kind of random.
Right. That would be counterintuitive to what it is he does. I think that there's something to the idea of getting yourself there and getting acclimated, but I can't say with 100% surety that what the Bears did was wrong, but he can't say with 100% surety that what they did was right. Back after this on The Score. The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Go check out the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, and Illinois. Season tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at NUSports.com. And this segment is being brought to you by the fine folks at Nutrisystem for Men. See how simple losing weight can be with Nutrisystem. The meals come to your door. You eat the food, lose the weight. Order at Nutrisystem.com/radio. Restrictions apply. Call or see the website for details. So the Bears are 3-2, along with 9 other teams in the NFL. And if Cleveland wins, I think that will make 10 tonight. They're taking on San Francisco, which I'm really interested to see. Cleveland's defense against San Francisco's offense, and whether or not the Niners are any good. The NFC North is shaping up to be, I think, a lot stronger than the Bears would prefer. And the NFC overall is a very interesting place that you're going to get real familiar with over the next 5 weeks. I'll talk with McNeil and Parkins about the Bears' loss next here on The Score.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
A big thank you to the crew. They did yeoman's work today. Tony Gill, a.k.a. Tone, a.k.a. Tony Two Bags, a.k.a. Tony, has done it again. And and white chocolate himself, Rick Camp. I'm going on a little bit of a vacation, be gone for a week and a half or something like that. And then I'll be back to get you ready for Bears versus Saints. But while I'm gone, there's some fine folks that are going to sit in for me, and a lot of football coverage is going to continue on a Built for Tough Monday that will go into Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. Like these fine gentlemen who are here for the afternoon show here on The Score, Dan McNeil and Danny Parkins. Hello, men.
Indeed we are here, Lawrence.
And I don't know about fine gentlemen, but thank you.
No,
we'll take it.
That's not said too often. Like Lawrence Holmes, I'm getting out of Dodge after this one today. Very
here,
timely,
man.
Too.
I'll be here.
Yeah, it's going to be a long week, isn't it? It's going to be, these things are going to go by very, very slowly until it's Bears and Saints in 13 days.
Yeah, what did Matt Nagy said? He had 9 days to stew over the Packers loss, and now it's going to be even longer to, in his words, be pissed off over this one. But I got Shep, Marathon Man, for 2 days, and then Spiegel hanging out with me for 2 days.
Good.
So we'll hold it down in the afternoons.
I never would have guessed that yesterday from the Bears defense. The offense, not much surprise me there, because I've believed all along in the Boomer Esiason philosophy, the more of you see of him, the more or the less you'll like of him, referring to Chase Daniels. But that defense getting pushed around the way it did was stunning yesterday.
Yeah, the Hicks injury obviously is a huge part of it. Not knowing what the hell's wrong with Roquan Smith is another part of it. But Mac, we talked about it multiple times. The Raiders have made huge investments in their offensive line.
Good word, huge, considering the way that they stack up. Three,
big
four,
fellas.
Yeah.
You got Trent Brown, who's one of the best tackles in the game. You got Miller, first-round pick. Rodney Hudson, highest-paid center in the game. We talked about them last week. And the Vikings, their offensive line, yeah, they get a lot of praise, but their center, the focal point.
Rookie
and bad. So Nick Williams and Eddie Goldman and Roy Robertson Harris, they abused him because not rookies and not bad. Man, Rodney Hudson's a different kind of dude. He dominated.
I noticed the Raiders aren't afraid to use the tight end to help in protection either, and occasionally the fullback gets a little bit of a workout. Amazing in the 21st century.
I love the last play with Jacobs. The fullback dove through first on the play, and then Jacobs dove in behind him.
It's, oh boy,
it's incredible. It looks like a school of dolphins. They just kind of like, I'm gonna go too.
That was just, man, I did not see that coming at all defensively.
It was a collective failure.
I feel
failure.
Like a fool for all the roses I threw at their feet last week.
Yeah, it's the NFL. There's no transitive property in this league. The Vikings can crush the Raiders, and then the Bears can crush the Vikings, and then the Raiders can crush the Bears.
And then the Raiders can crush the Colts, who then beat the Chiefs.
Yeah. It's not just a bad game making a few bad plays, though, Danny. It's getting pushed around. It's getting slapped around and not doing anything about it. There is nothing more humiliating in that game than when you can't stop the run, and they just got punished and punished and punished. And there were a few teams yesterday that decided to do it that way. Not many teams have the constitution to continue to do it when it's not going well, especially against these Bears the last few years. They did, and they were glad they did. That was ugly.
It was. Lawrence, I heard you say, you know, you didn't want to, I don't know how you put it, you didn't want to dismiss out of hand the travel situation.
Yeah, I don't want to summarily dismiss it.
So here's where I come out on it. I don't want to make excuses for them that they aren't making for themselves, and it didn't seem to have a problem or an effect in the second half, and it didn't affect Allen Robinson. So that feels to me like an excuse that we postscript on it. It's like if you come out flat in the first game, it's like, oh, the preseason was a mistake. But if you come out and you're dominant in the first game, it's like, well, then preseason was right. And we have data on this. Like, the Jaguars, the first two times they played in London, they went the entire week. Then every time since, they've gone 7 years in a row, they leave Thursday night into Friday morning. In 2017, three of the four teams that went over left Thursday night into Friday morning. The Saints were the only team that went left. The Chiefs, where Matt Nagy learned his plan when they played the Lions, went Thursday night into Friday morning. The majority of teams do it how the Bears did. Why the Raiders didn't is because they got their ass kicked last year against Seattle, and they're all the way out on the West Coast.
Right.
So it's a much longer flight.
They were already here. I mean, they were in Indianapolis, so it didn't make sense for them to go. I know that there is data. What I'm saying is that there's not enough of it for me to summarily go, oh, no, the Bears are doing it the right way. Just because they're doing it the way that other people have done it,
sure,
doesn't mean to me that that's the right way to do it, or the right way to do it for this particular matchup, which was, and in some of the Jaguar cases, the games have been at 3 o'clock instead of 6 o'clock. Like they got, who's playing? Are the Jags playing the stupid 8:30 a.m. game this week? Are they one of the two teams, or the Titans?
But that should help the Bears, right?
I agree. But I'm saying that all of it collectively, there isn't enough for me to just say, no, that had no effect on the 53 guys that you put on the plane Thursday night. I can't say that it had zero effect on it. So I understand what you're saying, but I'm not giving them an out. I don't like that Nagy just is like, no, that's not it. I don't think he knows. And I would rather him say, we'll keep studying it. This is the way we did it, but we'll look at what happened with us. I'll listen to my players and talk to them about how they felt. And then if we need to make an adjustment the next time we're asked to go to London, we will. But here's the way that we did it. That's all that I'm saying. That I'm not going to just allow him to go, no, that's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous question for you to ask. It's not a ridiculous question to ask because it's rare that we see his teams, and we did see it at the beginning of the season against Green Bay. But if you look at the way that the Bears are being described, especially in the first half, what are the words that come to mind? Slow, lethargic. We didn't start well. And I think that it's fair to then try and diagnose exactly why is it that you didn't start well. And if one of the reasons is guys didn't get enough sleep, guys' body clocks weren't attuned, I don't think that you can just summarily dismiss it and say it had no effect on us.
I think that is reasonable in terms of how he handles it publicly. It's just the majority of teams do it that way, so plenty of teams have won doing it that way. So for
plenty of teams have lost doing it that way too.
Absolutely, but I'm just saying in terms of the schedule, the majority of teams leave Thursday night into Friday morning, right? So Matt Nagy and the Bears are with the majority of the league, and oftentimes the teams that don't are the teams where that flight to London is a lot longer. They're the teams that have to go over there from the West Coast, right? So it's not that bad of a flight. If you look up the stuff about jet lag, they're like, 1 or 2 days and it's gone. They were there for 60 hours. They got there Friday morning. Yeah, they played Sunday night. Like they had plenty of time to overcome that. Is it possible that it affected the game? Absolutely. 5%, 10%, whatever it is.
Whatever that. But see, when you have all of the other stuff that goes into it, I'm just saying that you can't just sweep it under and say, well, the rest of the league does it this way, and we know for a fact that it didn't affect the way that we played.
You just don't know also, though, if they would have went early that couldn't have affected it worse, right?
I don't.
And nutrition, and bad hotel, bad practice fields, whatever the case may be.
And that's what I've said. I've said I can't definitively say that it made a difference.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he can definitively say that it didn't.
Yeah, they were just so bad that it
I think it if Trey like, Burton would have left last month, he still exactly. would have played very, very poorly.
He's not
boy,
moving
oh
well
exactly.
at all.
Exactly. He doesn't want to hit anybody, and there's lots of guys we'll throw darts at today, but he's among them. He is the least physical tight end I've ever seen in a Bears uniform anyway.
You know what, Mac? I don't even need him to be physical, but I do need him to be a difference maker in the pass game.
That would be great,
just
too.
Run.
But when you lose
run.
A battle
Move.
On the edge
just
with
run.
A corner, when a corner is hand fighting with you and turns the play inside and makes the tackle, man, oh man, where is your pride factor? I know it's not the typical tight end position he plays, but be physical once in a while and stay with a guy. Keep moving your feet. Jeez.
It was a pathetic effort all
Harry
around.
Harry Hestand, the great Harry Hestand. Harry Hestand, what do you for work?
I mean, honestly, it's arguably the worst game of the Matt Nagy era in terms of readiness to play. I haven't felt like they've been that outclassed on a field since he's been here.
I still feel like the Miami game was worse because they were so bad. Like Derek Carr is at least an average quarterback. Some people might have him as a little bit better than average, but he's at least an average. They lost to Brock Osweiler.
Brock Osweiler passed for almost 400 yards, and Frank Gore at 35 rushed for more than 100 yesterday. Just a ground gashing for the Bears.
It just wasn't as much on Nagy as yesterday was, man. John Gruden,
he out-coached
pantsed him.
Yep.
Just. And Chuck Pagano, frankly. You know, it's and Tabor, all of them. That was a collective failure. I don't know how. One of the things I want to ask Boomer when he's on with us today at 3 o'clock, how much of penalties do you put on coaches? Because
the Charles Leno stuff? Or are you thinking
man, all of it. They're sixth in the league in penalties. They had 10 penalties
yesterday. Yep.
Multiple, you know, dead ball penalties.
The Anthony Miller stuff.
Right, a couple. It just ran the gamut, right? They had a couple defensive holdings. They had an unnecessary roughness. They had a taunting. They had multiple illegal shifts and
false
starts.
It's chronic. We've seen enough. It's chronic with the Bears. They are a penalty-ridden team, no doubt.
But I was trying to track it. I was just going over game logs this morning. It's everything. It's after the whistle. It's before the whistle. It's offense. It's defense. It's holding.
Very versatile.
It's mental. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't just say, oh, they constantly get illegal shifts. You know what I mean? They've gotten dead ball fouls. They've gotten every type of penalty this year. And so I can't pinpoint it and just say, now there were three special teams penalties in this game. That's egregious.
And hearing Matt Nagy talk about how well special teams play yesterday
was
annoying.
I heard your comment on that, right?
That was annoying.
Yeah. He's just wrong.
Bad timing. Yeah.
I mean, you can't say that. Like some of this stuff is in front of my face. I am not a football expert, but I can point and go, your special teams didn't play great yesterday. What the are you talking about?
Yeah, they had nice moments, right? O'Donnell had nice moments. Tariq Cohen on the return had nice moments.
They got nice parts.
Yeah.
Like Patterson is a gunner. He's phenomenal.
Yeah.
As a gunner. But one of the most important plays of the game.
He got there earlier last week, by the way.
Oh,
he
yeah,
and
so
Allen
right,
Robinson,
exactly.
They flew out
yeah,
on Monday.
He traveled in early. He had no problem sleeping on the plane.
Some guys do, some guys don't.
No, hey, I'm one of them who can't. Like it would affect me more than it would affect others, no question.
But I mean, when one of the big plays in the game was your special teamer not being told what he was coached to do and doing it aggressively, and that's a mistake if that's exactly what happened, or him taking it upon himself in a situation where they're giving you the ball back and you've got the lead, that means he's not well coached. So one of those two things is true. But what isn't true is that your special teams played great yesterday.
I can't argue that. You're listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. We're talking to Bears fans on a Built for Tough Bears Monday. Boomer Esiason at 3, Mark Grody, who's still in London, at 4, and Eddie Jackson scheduled to join us at 5 o'clock.
All right, I look forward to hearing
Have
Eddie
a great
J.
trip, Lawrence. Enjoy yourself.
Mac, you do the same. I'll see you here next week.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.